Hey, welcome back to Corinth in Your Car, and happy summer. It is post-Memorial Day, as you listen, and it is the day after the last day of school for you people with families and kids. For the rest of you, it is just another week. But we're all here, Adam, Josh, Luke, and we're excited. I'm a little stuffy today. Woke up yesterday with some allergies, but I don't think I'm contagious.
Well, allergies aren't contagious.
I think it is just allergies. That's what I'm trying to say. So,
hey, you know what? It's all good.
Yeah. Graduation was last week, graduation season. So we celebrated a lot of graduates here and all across the nation. What's one piece of advice you wish someone would have told you when you graduated?
Rolled jeans aren't as cool as they look.
Were you doing that in high school?
No, I wasn't doing that in high school. That wasn't until a college thing.
Solid advice right there.
Adam, it's been a minute since you graduated high school.
It's been a lot of minutes.
Can you remember?
Oh, no. I don't remember anything from that. I really, really don't. I think that the one piece of advice I would give somebody now is don't feel like you got to have everything figured out right now.
Yeah, when you're 17 or 18 years old.
17 or 18 years old, you don't got to know it all.
Have your entire life mapped out. Yeah,
because who knows what the Lord's going to do.
Right.
And what you think is your path now may not be your path in...
6 months, 6 years.
6 years, 10 years, I mean.
Yeah.
Time is your friend.
Be faithful.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Don't be lazy. Don't use that as an excuse to not try anything, but go, in courage. It's God's with you.
Yeah, I was, you just said that one. I was reading something, I can't remember if I was reading it or I saw it on the Instagram, but it was talking about, ruthless elimination of hurry and all those other things, which is fantastic, but that here we go with our pendulum swing again, is that people have used that as an excuse to just be lazy. It's just like, I gotta do this. I gotta do this to be able. And it's just like
Sabbath is not laziness.
No,
it actually takes more work to maybe do it right. Because back in the day, you would get all your shopping done and meals prepped before sundown,
right?
And then you were intentionally worshiping and with people, and so it's not laziness at all.
No, and even the
I just need a mental health day.
Yeah, or
which really means I just want to lay in bed and watch Netflix.
Yeah,
and that's not actually good for your mental health. So
probably not.
Yeah.
But even too, outside of the Sabbath, of just like, not wanting to.
Yep.
Go for it. So
that was a good transition, Luke. What should we be doing over the summer? Because it's not lying in bed and watching Netflix.
No, so you probably shouldn't do
advice,
that.
Advice for this summer. For all ages, how do we at Corinth make the most of the summer? We've talked about this before, just how summer, sometimes it's easy to shift into different rhythms and maybe slide out of some of the better practices. So how do we stay in front of that?
Try to make sure that the only screen in your life is the screen door that you walk through on your way outside. Go outside. Have some fun. Limit your screen time.
I do. Getting some sunshine is great. I think that the other thing would be just knowing that there's going to be travel, there's going to be all those other kind of things. So be stay connected the best that you can.
Yeah.
That's one of the benefits of church online is that you are able to stay connected even if you're...
at Panama City Beach.
Yeah, at Panama City Beach. Yep. And our team works really, really hard. The back of house team and our online production team, they work really, really hard. So. To make that as engaging as we possibly can. So I'd say stay engaged.
Yep.
Make a point to, if you miss a week, try not to miss two and all those things that we say.
Yep. Yeah. I would just say, I was sitting with some guys last night and just the conversation around the table was just some honesty saying, hey, this season has been busy. And so we all just encouraged one another with a practical step. And basically the takeaway was, hey, let's do this together. And so maybe you do something together with some people, just to call each other up to remind of the better rhythms to have. So anyway, that's what we have for the summer. Woo-hoo. Also wear sunscreen if you need it.
Yeah. I do.
SPF 90.
Yeah, I'm just going to get a bucket hat.
That's good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got one of those.
You could wear long sleeve shirts, you know, those sun shirts.
Yeah, something like that.
All right, we got to get going. So, in the news. All right, we got two stories there. You actually see pictures today, which is kind of fun. Which one do you want? One or two?
Go for it, Luke. Your choice.
My choice. Let's go with number one. looks a little bit more interesting to me, at least.
Yeah. All right. What is happening? I clicked. There we go. This is actually not a new news story because this was during lockdown of COVID.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow, so we're,
this is old. This is a 5 year.
But I found it interesting.
Yes. Okay.
British man runs marathon in backyard during lockdown. So you see the picture there. His name's James Campbell. He ran a charity marathon in his backyard while on lockdown. And let's see. He did a 6 meter, so a 20-foot shuffle, from one end of his small backyard to the other after promising to run a marathon if one of his Twitter messages received 10,000 retweets.
Wow.
So by the time Campbell completed the marathon, in just over 5 hours, he had raised more than 18,000 pounds or $22,000.
Usually you lose 18,000 pounds when you run a marathon.
There you go. Yeah, can you imagine shuffling back and forth in your yard for 5 hours
straight?
That's
got to be so tiring.
Only 20 feet. I mean, look, that's the picture you see there is his entire backyard.
I wonder if he ran on the patio as well, or did he just stay to the grass?
I mean, I don't know. The grass doesn't look like it's 20 feet long. It seems like you would have to use the
patio.
So does it say that he ran just straight line, or did he run in circles?
It said he was shuffling back and forth. So it looks like
what do we think? Just back
straight line
and forth.
Yeah,
that'd take a long time.
How did he? I guess he used a watch to track, you know, how long he had or how his distance was.
Yeah. So he ran across the patch of grass, some stones, and a small patio.
Okay.
He calculated he would have to traverse his yard at least 7,000 times to reach 42.2 kilometers.
Kilometers, yeah.
26.2 miles, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Is that a good time?
That, I mean.
No. A marathon, like world-class runners are going to be, golly, in the 2 hours somewhere.
Mm. So yeah. Slacker.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
What did you do during your lockdown, though? I did not run a marathon. I know that.
I lifted a lot of weights. I did do that.
I walked some nine holes, played some disc golf. Did not run a marathon, though.
And I wish I would have been playing golf then. That would have been nice.
Yeah.
I mean, because like, that's whenever they had the holes were...
Yeah. The cups were, you just like elevated. So you bounced, like you just bounced the ball off of the... So you could hit it really hard.
Correct.
To make your line good. It's like, made it.
Yeah. I made it because
it hit the cup. Yep.
So the world record for a marathon is we've almost broken 2 hours. It's 2 hours and 35 seconds.
Mm. Oh my goodness!
I mean, that's crazy.
That is wild.
Yeah, just crazy.
Somebody.
So he could.
Surely we're gonna get sub two.
Yeah.
At some point.
I mean, 35 seconds over 26 miles is only a second a mile, basically.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, yeah, definitely. At some point. Mm. Not me. I will not do that.
Yeah. Did you do a marathon in 5.5 hours?
Yeah, I did. The longest I've ran is a half, and it was like hour 45.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm confident I could get.
So if you were racing this guy in his backyard,
if I was on a road, I don't know that I could shuffle that long.
How many with the track being that small? If you ran a 4 hour marathon and he ran a 5.5 hour marathon, how many times would you lap him?
What's 7,000 laps?
What's 20% of 7,000? I mean, whatever that would be. Over 1,000 times, you know, 1,500 times or so.
That would be
funny.
Here I go again.
On your left.
On your left.
On your left.
Here I go.
On your left.
That's like the way old SNL skit where Jim Carrey was the lifeguard.
Lifeguard
right?
of jacuzzi.
The jacuzzi.
Yep.
Oh, man.
7,000 times. So do you think he would have ran it faster if Josh was there running against him?
I don't know.
I'm sure.
That would be really, because like, how do you even keep a good pace of just shuffling across your backyard without somebody setting the pace?
I got
Could he have shaved off an hour?
Maybe. Maybe so. I don't know.
Maybe so.
Somebody needs to send this guy a note and see how many other yard marathons he's ran.
Yeah. Well, he may have experienced pain. I'm not sure. But Luke, you talked about pain.
Dynamite.
Yeah. Sunday.
Great transition.
Nice.
Yeah. I just thought of that now. So.
Yeah.
Didn't plan that at all. And it was not good. But Sunday, you talked about pain and how sometimes it's the loudest way God speaks. It's kind of like a megaphone. And often, obviously, we don't want pain. Like, we don't go after it necessarily. We don't get excited when it comes. But one of the great truths of life is it's a great teacher. And as a Christian, God can be our great teacher through pain. You said your pinky isn't straight anymore?
No, it's not.
So I'm wondering if anyone is going to ask to see it on Sunday, do you think, after the service, to show me your pinky?
I don't know. I'm gonna hold it up there from stage when I see it. Of course, that's going to be a small
long
view.
It's a long view.
Maybe the online team will kind of zoom in. But I imagine someone will ask. But yeah, you guys can see it right now. It used to look like this one.
You showed me before.
And now it looks like that. So not the way it's supposed to be. I don't have much strength in it anymore either.
Have you ever considered breaking it again and so it could heal properly?
Every time I think about it, I just like start to hurt. And then I could do it right now. Just pop right there.
I mean,
I don't want to though. That would hurt.
Yeah.
I don't want pain. I want to avoid it.
The question,
even if in the long run, it'd be good for me.
The question was, what if that pain isn't something to fix, but a message to hear? And then, you know, your pain, it is loud, but the frequency of God's grace is in fact louder.
Yeah.
So why 1 Corinthians 12? What was intriguing about that? And then just what else did you learn from the passage, maybe besides what you told us? Any other tidbits that are fun?
Sure. I think the correct answer is because that was the passage assigned. not really, because I know that there's freedom to sure. move around. But verse 10 is really what it came down to. And 7 is for sure like the point in which you see Paul struggling with pain. 8 is where you see him asking God to take it away. 9 is where you hear Paul talk about what he heard back from the Lord. But verse 10 is where he gets to the point to where he says, that's why I take pleasure in my weakness and in insults and in hardship and in persecutions and in troubles. And so just that verse, when you take that verse, you begin to realize, oh my goodness, like Paul is able to rejoice in pain because of what he's gaining from it. I think what he's gaining from it is a deeper sense of God's presence, maybe a call from God back into grace. And that's something that we don't want to miss in the midst of our pain too. And so I think verse 10 kind of is one of the verses whenever I started to sit down with this, I'm like, here we go. That's why, mm-hmm. that's why this passage, because he gets himself to, joy in the midst of pain because of the way that God's speaking to him and how he's tuning in.
Yeah. And of course we know there's other stories where, you know, he's singing in prison and it creates some miraculous stuff.
Yeah. It turns prison into praise room.
Yeah. So Adam, what are your kind of high level thoughts? 30,000 foot blimp view?
Yeah, no, I think that whenever we talk about, you know, the idea of pain, it's interesting. Just about always, like whenever we're putting out surveys or those things, asking for people, what do you want to hear more about? Or this is always one of those things that ends up near the top of the list as well. And I think that pain can be, without the proper perspective, it can be very confusing for us.
Yeah.
And so I think that the idea of redemptive suffering, redemptive pain, about how it actually purifies and kind of moves us along is really, really helpful. In fact, I don't know if you guys read Oswald today or not, but Oswald actually kind of talks about this a little bit in the May 22nd devotional.
Okay.
You know, talking about how God isn't concerned with our plans, going back to our graduate.
Yeah, there we go. Yep. No kidding.
You know, this is what he says today. He's like, he doesn't say, do you want to go through this trial? Do you want to suffer this loss? But he allows things to happen to us for his own purposes. So either the things we go through make us sweeter, better, and nobler, or they make us more critical and fault-finding, more insistent on having our own way.
Yep.
So then he says, either trials and difficulties make us fiends or they make us saints. Oof. And it depends entirely on our relationship with God. So,
yeah.
So I think that, you know, high level thought is that God really does use this because pain is what draws us closer. I mean, it really, really does.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And of course, one of those things is, I mean, God is sovereign, right? So sometimes he just allows it. And sometimes, I mean, even if you think of Old Testament Israel, like he sent them to captivity.
Mm-hmm.
He sent them to pain for a long time.
Yeah.
70 years. And it was for a greater purpose. So anyway, it is the age-old question, why do bad things happen to good people? They seem to keep on asking that. And that's not the direction we went Sunday, but lots of good answers there too.
Right.
So 12:7-10. To keep me from becoming proud, Paul says, I was given a thorn in my flesh, a messenger from Satan, even, to torment me and keep me from becoming proud. Three times I asked the Lord to take it away. Each time he said, my grace is all you need. My power works best in weakness. So now I am glad to boast about my weakness so that the power of Christ can work through me. And here it is, Luke. That's why I take pleasure in my weakness and in insults, hardships, persecutions, and troubles that I suffer for Christ, because when I am weak, then I am strong. Thorn in the flesh. You asked a question in the email, what is the thorn?
Yeah.
It's a fun question, because in the sermon, you gave several possibilities.
Kind of the options,
All the scholars argue about it. What are those options again? And do you have any that you think that you didn't list in the sermon? Any additional options?
So the options that have kind of been talked through in the scholastic world is physical ailment. So Paul struggling with something like an eyesight issue, speech difficulties, malaria, epilepsy, or spiritual oppression, says that it's a messenger from Satan. So some have suggested that this could be some pretty intense spiritual warfare that Paul is wrestling with. Relational opposition is one of the suggestions, so that Paul is struggling with a specific type of person or group of people. In the context of 2 Corinthians, that one makes a lot of sense as well, because part of his problem is with those super apostles that come in and lead the church astray. And so he could be talking about the thorn in the flesh being a person or a group of people. And then more recently, some have just suggested like some mental or emotional suffering. So Paul struggling with anxiety, depression, something along those lines. Those are kind of the four.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about his violent past. Thinking through that.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah. But I think what is most likely is the eyesight thing. It's just if you made me pick one, I'd probably say that. Paul mentions his eyesight stuff in Galatians.
Uh-huh.
Yep. It's really funny in chapter 6 as he's wrapping up the book.
Mm-hmm.
He sits down to write. You know, Paul probably had someone writing down what he said, but in chapter 6, he actually picks up the pen and you see, I'm writing this. Uh-huh. I'm using big letters is what he says, just because of the eyesight thing. And if you pay attention to, you know, there's a couple of date options for Galatians. You can date Galatians early into like the 49-50 range, or you can date it later to like 54-55. 2 Corinthians would have been about 54-55. And so he is struggling with the eyesight thing either for 6-7 years before he even writes 2 Corinthians, mm-hmm. or coincided at about the same time that he's writing 2 Corinthians. So
yeah,
I think that's what's most likely. I don't know for sure though.
But the point that it was a great point in the sermon. You said the ambiguity may actually drive home the point.
Right.
Vagueness may be
right.
So he can be pastoral.
Sure.
So that's such a great point. Kind of a broad question, but how has pain served purposes in your life? I mean, we've talked about this before, but what are some of the lessons that we've learned?
I mean, it could be sports, it could be relational, it could be any number of things.
I'm trying to think of the most recent thing for me. I think the most recent kind of season of some sort of pain was a little bit of a call out of apathy for me. Something really, really hard happened in our community. I just kind of hit the ground running. It's game time. Here we go. Caring for people, trying the best I can. But then it was a couple of weeks after the hard work of trying to care for people that it actually began to hit me, and struggled with pain for a little bit, and wrestling through that, I think helped me realize I had become a little bit more hard-hearted and apathetic than what a in-touch follower of Jesus really should be. And so I think that season of pain kind of identified where I was not quite in alignment with Jesus.
Okay.
Started the process of kind of drawing back towards him. And that's the most recent thing I can think of.
Yeah. Adam, anything to...
Yeah, I think that, you know, the C.S. Lewis quote that gets referenced later in the message, I think it's later.
Which one? I threw the one you mentioned as well.
Yeah, that's not that one, even though that one would work too. But the God whispers in our pleasures and shouts in our, pain or music. It's the megaphone quote there. I think just generally looking back over my life, I would say that has... pain has always been the thing that has probably accelerated and deepened relationship with God more than anything in my life. Mm-hmm. That it's in those painful seasons, the questioning seasons, to where and what's weird about it is, like, I don't know that it feels like it's doing that in the moment.
Right. Yep.
But then whenever you are able to come out of that season, however long it is, then you're able to kind of go, oh, wow, things have changed a little bit. And there is just a deeper relationship that is there. And it's actually kind of like, in the strangest way, I mean, pain's one of those weird things, I think. So tell me what you guys think.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
Because pain really, I don't feel like there's really much of an in-between space there.
You're either in pain or you're not.
Well, where I was going is... when it comes to your relationship with God, it's either going to drive you closer or further away.
Gotcha. Like what Oswald was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot of in-between space that I see, to where it's just like somebody goes through a painful season and they're just kind of like, well, yeah, that was there. And, you know, it generally seems to either drive a wedge or bring closer. People get really, really angry and bitter at God for allowing that, or people come through the other side and they're just like, man, I would never want to, I don't want to do this again.
Yeah.
And given the choice, I never will. Mm-hmm. But through it, God has done something redemptive in me.
Yeah, which was kind of leading into point number two here. Mm-hmm. Why Paul prayed three times, he said. Do you think it was only three times? Or do you think
he's just a
more?
Preacher?
Yeah. Three is this complete number or something. I don't know. But he prayed consistently for it to be taken away. And there's other scriptural examples that you gave, like David or Hannah or Job or Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of those examples, though, in some way were no. Like God said no.
Yeah.
Which means he did answer, which was a good point. And for us, it means it is okay to pray for pain to be reduced.
Absolutely.
It's not wrong to pray that.
Yeah.
You know, but then the third point, Paul's perspective is shifted in pain. So that's why when you said God gave him the answer of no, how do you think he was able to trust God's no for Paul?
Man, that's a really good question. I think that Paul does well what we try to do well, which is to remember that God is faithful. So this isn't the first, the thorn in the flesh that he is struggling with is not the first painful moment of Paul's life.
Yep.
And Paul, I mean, even earlier in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, because remember in 2 Corinthians chapter 10 through 13, this is where Paul is giving kind of one last defense of himself against those in the church that still might reject him and his authority. And he's trying to do that without boasting. But he's comparing himself and his merit as an apostle of Jesus versus the false prophets, these super apostles who had come in and started to lead the church astray. And so he starts to list off all of these things that he has and has been through and has suffered. Dude's been through it.
Yeah.
And yeah. Over and over and over again, I think what Paul can see is, well, I'm still going.
Uh-huh.
God's still faithful. So I think it's Paul's ability to look back at God's past faithfulness. But I also think one of the things about Paul you'll read as you go through all of his epistles is Paul is so kingdom minded. Like it's I press on to the race, to the end of the race. Like he knows that his time is short, coming near, that there is a reward waiting for him, and so he's going strong because he knows that God is faithful to his promise to welcome him into his kingdom.
Is it 1 Corinthians or 2 Corinthians? I'm trying to track this down right now to where he talks about how they were shipwrecked and received the
39 loaves and all that. Yeah. Is that
second?
I'm pretty sure it's second.
Isn't that Second Corinthians?
Yeah.
He's talking about all the reasons.
Yeah. It's not in chapter one or two. Cause I just did a real quick scan of that. But so, you know, as I'm thinking through it, it's like one of the reasons why he is able to do this is because he has been,
that's 2 Corinthians 11.
It's 11.
Is it 11? Yeah. Okay, yeah, so
it's within that context.
So it's within this context to where he's talking about it. This idea. So he's able to trust God's no because he's seen God's faithfulness in the past.
Right. I think. Yeah.
Yep. And so it's just, you know, I've gone through this. I've gone through this. I've gone through this. God is able. God is faithful. God is able. God is faithful. And so, the principle then to kind of understand is just like The longer that we are able to walk with Jesus like this, the easier. Oh gosh, is that how I want to say this? It's not the easier, but the more trusting we become whenever the no's do show up.
Yeah,
and the more that we've gone through, it just deepens and it deepens and deepens. So I guess the encouragement or the the exhortation would be in the midst of the pain, don't walk away from this, because by walking away in the midst of pain, you may actually be walking away from that which is going to like take your faith to the next deeper level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's how Paul actually is able to get there. Because when is 2 Corinthians written? How late is this? What are we thinking?
Probably about 55.
So it's... he's got 13 years after this, ish. Didn't he? Mm-hmm. Was he 68?
I think so.
66. So
somewhere around there.
So it's, and I think maybe even then that's another encouragement as well. It's like this isn't just like old man Paul, who's sitting in the prison at this point. You know, no, he'll get there.
Yeah, that's Philippians.
That's Philippians.
Well, live as Christ, die as gain, man. Let's go.
Which prison though?
Because, well,
like the story I referenced earlier from Acts 16, where he and Silas are singing in the prison, that happens earlier than 2 Corinthians is written.
Yeah, but the context for Corinth is, I think, Acts chapter 18.
No, I know that, so, but I'm just saying, I'm piggybacking on what you already said to say he's already been in situations where
absolutely.
He's been in pain. He's been in prison, and he's seen God's faithfulness,
mm-hmm.
and by no means does he expect every imprisonment is going to be a miraculous release.
Right,
right.
But he was singing in the prison before he ever had a hope to be released. He was just singing, like he was already singing.
Right.
Well, and then too, I mean, we've referenced this before, but like in Acts chapter, I think it's 9, whenever Ananias is sent to Paul.
Yeah.
Jesus tells him, I'm going to show him how much he must suffer for my name. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty confident that Ananias passed that message along to Paul in that moment. Just like, hey, just so you know, here's what Jesus told me. You're going to suffer a lot.
Yeah.
And so anything that Paul is going to go through should not be a massive surprise. But that's what is going to be the deepening for him. So,
yeah.
Great stuff.
Verse 11 is really fun too, just tying it into the context of what Paul's trying to do. Because you get verse 10, which is incredible. Really, verse 10 is not just a summary of the verses that we looked at, but verse 10 really is a summary of this like long thought that he goes on about suffering. He just goes on and on and on. And so in verse 11, he says, right after verse 10, I've made a fool of myself, but you drove me to it. I ought to have been commended by you, for I am not in the least inferior to the super apostles, even though, catch it, I am nothing. Uh-huh. Right? And so just the way that, here's what I'm getting at. This is really kind of a nebulous point, but even the way that Paul is defending himself against the super apostles shows that this thorn in the flesh that was there to keep him from becoming proud worked. Mm-hmm. Because he is sitting here frustrated as a pastor who loves this people. And if he was proud, he could have gone about this in an entirely different way. But instead, this thorn, this pain that he deals with, actually did humble him. And I think it comes across in the text as he's trying to defend himself.
Yeah, good. Man, good stuff on kind of teaching through the text, telling us what it all means and what's going on. And then we turn to application. And 3 points, turn to God, understand the purpose, and rest in grace. Really, I mean, it was almost like, not exactly the same, but you just kind of look at what Paul did, right, and then you said, hey, let's do what he did.
I think it was...
Here are like 3 points.
It was him who said, follow me as I follow Christ.
Yeah, so... Right.
So I'm like, okay.
A lot in the same way. You just look at the points that you made in the teaching through it, you know, and right. It was turn to God, understand the purpose, and rest in grace, and it was just really good stuff. I love that you said pray honest, not pretty. So,
yeah.
What does that look like? Because what does that look like?
Well, I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, right?
Driving, walking, riding, yelling.
Yeah, all of it.
Hitting.
Like your prayers, I think some people get intimidated by prayer because they think that it's got to be this, perfect recipe of the right words and phrases in the right places with the right tones. Uh-huh. I guess that would be right if this is religion, but it's not. Like, this isn't religion. And so God already knows what's on your heart better than you do. So just tell him, like, if you're in a situation where your pain is driving you to anger, it's okay to tell God that you're angry at him. He can handle that. Uh-huh. It's okay to tell God that you're confused at what's going on. It's okay to tell God that you are grieving and that you are sad. He understands that. Actually, he understands that completely because he became flesh and he felt all of those same things, anger and confusion, sadness, and all of the things that you are dealing with, he knows. And so tell him, like, Adam, it was you that pointed out this other C.S. Lewis quote, mm-hmm. which was just like, we need to lay before God what is in us, not what ought to be in us. Mm-hmm. We don't have to put on a performance for God,
right?
Because he can see right through the performance anyway. So pray honest. Tell him what is really going on.
Yeah, I remember one heart season, just it was really kind of a combination of what you said here, pray honest and not pretty, and worship anyway. I remember just taking a long drive and playing some, like a worship album, but also just praying honestly to God, just being frustrated. as well. So maybe it is taking a drive for you or taking a walk. You know, prayer is just, like you said, a relationship and communication. And
And I think I would throw in here is we pray honest, not pretty. We lay what's in us, not what ought be in us. But then also, I think a component of this is then we are also prepared for the response back we may get. You know, I think of Job whenever he's going through all of his stuff. And even though Job was, I don't know, Job's weird to me, man.
It's a weird story.
It's weird. Like, anyway. but the way that God responds to him.
Dude, what's your problem?
Yeah.
Is what God really says.
Yeah, it's like, you know, remember who I am and remember who you are. And so in that, we do have to be prepared for the response. I think Paul is a good example of that, of God, take it away, take it away, take it away. Mm-hmm. And he's like, the Lord said no.
Yeah. Or even Jesus.
Yeah.
Not my will, but your will be done.
Yeah. And so I think we just have to be prepared for what the Lord may reveal to us. So yes, we lay it, but we still turn to him. And that's what we were saying earlier about how don't allow it to be something that drives a wedge between you, but allow it to draw you into his presence further, even if you may be uncomfortable with or unhappy. I think unhappy is the right, an okay word.
Yeah.
You can be unhappy with how, you know, the response, but yet it does, can we get to the place to where we are able to say what Paul says there in 7 through 10, so therefore I will boast all the more about my weaknesses, for it's in, you know, his grace is sufficient in weakness.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's just the, I think that would be just the reminder that I would throw in there as well, is that we do pray honest, but whenever we're honest, we should probably be ready for honesty back.
Yeah, I've forgotten this quote until now, and I had to look it up because I didn't even know who it was. Some French Dominican monk said this back in the 1800s. He said, if God would concede me his omnipotence, so his power, for 24 hours, you would see how many changes I would make in the world. But if he gave me his wisdom too, I would leave things as they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a powerful thought, because that's what Job, that's what God does to Job. He just takes him on a tour. It's like, hey, look at the galaxies and look at the world. And do you have the wisdom for this?
Yeah.
So it's very, very humbling.
Yeah,
for sure.
Point two was understand the purpose. And this is kind of what we said earlier. Sometimes God actually does make us go through it. Sometimes he just allows it. And sometimes it's the consequences of what we've done. Like, there's so many ways, so many reasons why our pain could be happening.
Correct.
It's not that God makes it all happen. But the point was, you know, he doesn't always remove it, but he will redeem it. That is the promise.
Yeah.
No matter what, he can redeem it. So well, you gave a way, ask forming questions instead of fix-it questions. Let's remind people some of those questions. They were really, really good. How do we do that?
Yeah. I changed the language in the sermon a little bit after Adam pointed something out. I think the language is ask forming questions alongside of fix it questions. Because Paul doesn't really actually, like, Paul does ask the fix it, right? Like, take it away, take it away, take it away. So it's not wrong or an evidence of a lack of faith to ask God for healing or to ask God to remove the pain and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, sure.
But in regards to the frequency conversation, if God is using pain to speak to us, to allow us to draw near to him, to tune towards his voice, then we want to make sure that we're people who, in the midst of our pain, ask those forming questions as well.
Yeah.
And so just, I gave some examples. You know, you've got a diagnosis or a physical ailment or illness or something like that. The fix it question is to ask God, why don't you just heal me? God, please, please do that. Please do that. Please do that. But the forming question might be, God, how are you using this to shape my dependence on you? Or God, what part of your character can I learn only through this weakness? And whenever you start to ask questions like that and tune into what God might be saying, I think that you have a really, really clear and evident way in which you can grow in your faith and in your confidence in God. So We want to be people who reflect well and ask forming questions in the midst of our pain.
Yeah, I go to, I think it's Habakkuk 3:18.
Yep.
You know.
Yet.
Nevertheless.
Mark Scott, man, preached this sermon, "Do you have the courage to pray yet?"
Yeah.
And I love that line.
Yeah.
Yes. And so, which is fully acknowledging all the rough things that are going on, lamenting all the bad things that are going on in Habakkuk. I mean, if you read
because he says, what does he say? Like, even though there's no wine or grain or anything, like, yet I will praise God, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that is. It's so even though the fig trees have no blossoms, even though there are no grapes on the vines, even though the olive crop fails and the fields lie empty and barren, even though the flocks die in the fields and the cattle barns are empty, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. And that there's different translations. It's got to be nevertheless.
Yeah.
Well, I think KJV.
A couple years ago, you pointed this out, Adam, in a sermon where you the last words of Habakkuk is actually these words are written to the tune of something something. It's like a worship song.
Yeah,
like it's a poem.
Yeah,
you know, it's not just his words. It was kind of
That's in verse 19. Yeah, chief musician with my stringed instruments.
Yeah, I mean, it's like he wrote a song about this.
Yes.
So
yeah. So I think that's the idea of forming. Is where my brain kind of went as just kind of continuing to think through this is. So once again, I don't think there's any issue with praying the God, would you please heal me from cancer?
Right. Sure. You're not wrong.
You're not wrong praying that. In fact, pray it.
Yeah. And believe.
And believe ask and ask, you know, at the same time, it's the alongside of it. It is but yet, nevertheless, even if you don't, God, how are you trying to use this to help me become, you know, how can this be used to maybe bring my family to faith? How can this be used to be a witness to, you know, your faithfulness, you know, in my life, you know? So I think those are the forming questions.
Yeah. I think of, you know, last season of The Chosen was the Lazarus scene. And I thought they did a good job of capturing the emotion in Jesus as his friend dies and he's disappointing people who wished he would have done something different to see how much he breaks too.
Yeah.
And I remember years ago writing some paper for, I think, the CLC class, really, or the youth group both, just why does God let bad things happen to good people?
Mm-hmm.
One of those is obviously God suffered too. Like he's right there with you. He's the only God that did that.
Yeah. Remember. Yeah. So the phrase is, remember, whenever you think about bad things happening to good people, remember that good people includes Jesus.
Correct.
Right. Like the
and
bad
only
things.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
he's the only good people.
I can't remember which preacher said it. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, why does God let bad things happen to good people? And he said he only let that happen once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it was on the cross whenever God let that happen.
Yeah, and so the driving point to this passage, verse 10, really the last application point, Luke, you said rest in grace. So no matter what answer we get, yes or no, now or later, I'm going to heal you. I'm not quite going to heal you until heaven, whatever it is. God does promise grace. Mm-hmm. He promises to be with you through the darkest valley. And I love how you said sufficient grace every morning. It's the new morning mercy.
Yeah.
So the only other question I had really was just how do we do that well? Books, resources, people, processes that have helped you that we can help others with.
I think a good book that I would recommend is Groeschel, and I think it's in our resource room, is Groeschel's Hope in the Dark.
Hope in the Dark.
Yeah. Which was written to family friends who were going through some really, really rough stuff, but then I think updated and adopted into a book for him whenever he and his family went through some really, really difficult things with the health of his one of his daughters. So,
and that goes through Habakkuk, I think,
goes
right?
Through Habakkuk.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yeah.
So it is a really good book. Highly recommend.
Yeah, if we're going the book route, Walking with God Through Pain and Suffering.
Tim Keller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So.
Good old Philip Yancey.
Yeah. Where's God when it hurts?
Where's God when it hurts and the problem of pain?
Yeah.
Or no, Problem of Pain. Is that when?
That's Lewis.
Is that Lewis?
Uh-huh.
Feels like there's C.S. Lewis. There's like a second Yancey book on that too.
I think there is.
The Gift of Pain.
But
that's what his is.
He did some work with lepers.
Yeah, that's Dr. Brand.
If I remember correctly, because they talked about, you know, you do want some pain because lepers experience no pain and then your fingers fall off.
Yeah, it's Dr. Brand is that guy's name. Yeah. And I believe it's, the book is called The Gift of Pain.
Yeah.
Why we hurt and what we can do.
Yeah.
And why we need it or something like that.
I mean, the really elementary example, of course, is when you're a child and you skin your knee.
Right.
You run to your mom and she puts Neosporin and a Band-Aid on it and you get the healing you need.
Oh, man.
And if you didn't feel that, you would bleed out or you would get infected or all that stuff.
And do you want to feel really old? Well, I will feel really old. That book came out in 1993.
Oh, I thought you were going to say 80s.
No.
But 93 for Yancey?
Yeah, The Gift of Pain.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember reading that in college.
Yeah, Where's God When It Hurts? What are the resources? If you're looking for just daily stuff, I think we talk about Oswald Chambers a lot.
Or
a classic resource, or New Morning Mercies.
I was about to say, quite literally, New Morning Mercies, Paul David Tripp. And really, just it is the bingo card. It is the stereotypical thing. But rest in grace really does mean develop good, healthy spiritual rhythms.
Yeah.
So that you are preaching the gospel to yourself, so that you are allowing yourself to sit in the presence of God, so that you are surrounding yourself with community, like all of these different things, that's how you rest in grace. And so it is the go-to that we always give, but it's the go-to that we always give because it's what it actually looks like to be spiritually formed. So,
well, and yeah. At the risk of saying something obvious, Psalms, the prayer book of the people of God for thousands of years, has plenty of psalms in it that are tough.
Right.
And, you know, expressing disappointment in God and why he won't.
Right.
Which
pattern of worship. Just goes again to say, like, if that made it into canon of Scripture, then God really can't handle what's on your heart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the lines from the message, and this is really applicable not just to the conversation of pain, but also to the conversation of like what grace really actually does. But I said grace invites us to stop striving and to start abiding. Mm-hmm. And that's really what it is. Like if you want to rest in grace, what it looks like is to remain, to abide, to stay with Jesus. John chapter 15 language. Yeah. So
we said it earlier, but to repeat it, bottom line is your pain is loud. You know, it may be loud. It certainly is. But God's grace is louder. So interesting and challenge. Thank God for your thorn.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's some song that came out a few years ago, I thank God for the scars or something, because it points to, you know, I don't know the whole lyrics, but pointed to like the scars of Jesus, of course, as well. But just the scars are what tell the story of God's past faithfulness. So interesting. Anyway. Let's end with some fun, all right? This is real or fake Christian band edition.
Woohoo!
All right.
So like the name of the band?
I'm going to say a name of a band, and you and Adam both, you can answer the same if you want, or you can go against each other if you want. Tell me if it's real or fake, all right? Sheep Among Wolves. That's a band name.
That's a real
band name.
I'm going to go real.
It's actually fake.
Oh man.
All right. This one you should get. For King and Country.
Oh, that's real.
That's real. Holy Ghost.
Say Christian. Just kidding.
Holy Ghost Notes.
Holy Ghost Notes.
No, that's fake.
I had hoped that's not real.
That's fake.
Okay, good.
All right. Anne Berlin.
What?
Anne Berlin.
Yes, that's real.
That's real.
It's a real.
Yep.
Sanctified Firestorm.
Fake.
I'll go real.
It's fake.
Oh.
But it does sound like a youth group lock-in theme.
Sure does.
Sanctified Firestorm.
Citizens.
Ain't nothing sanctified about a lock-in.
Citizens. Is that a real or fake band name?
Oh, Citizens. That's a tough one. I'm going to go real.
Real.
It is real. They used to be Citizens and Saints, and they just rebranded to Citizens.
Okay.
All right. Casting Lots.
No.
No, it's casting crowns, not casting lots.
You're correct. Yeah. It's a fake band. All right, My Epic.
My Epic. No.
No.
That's actually a real band.
Is it real?
Yeah.
Lame.
Post-hardcore band with... Yeah, there we go. Okay. The Jordan River Revival.
Ooh, I'm going...
That sounds
real. Let's
do it. That sounds real.
Unfortunately, it's fake.
Oh, but man. Trademark.
It does sound like a vintage gospel.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking like the Gaither
of world. No, I was thinking like a Mumford & Sons knockoff.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Mumford & Sons. I was thinking Gaither.
All right. Let's just do a couple more here.
Mumford & Sons, Christian?
All right. Zechariah's Trumpet.
No. Please tell me no.
It's fake.
Fake? It's fake. No, just...
All right, please. Echoing Angels.
That's real.
Ooh, that sounds real.
That's real.
That one's real.
Do you know it?
I recognize their name. I can't tell you a single song of theirs.
Okay.
Taylor Swift knockoff.
All right, and last one for the day, Sidewalk Prophets.
That's real.
Oh, that's real.
Hey, I've got one.
Reliant K,
real. This is one of my favorite bands of all time.
So it's real.
And it is real. And they only had one album, and I cannot find it anywhere except for maybe on YouTube. And it's a band called Ornan's Floor.
Oh, yeah, you told me that.
Worship band put together really, really great music. And it's based off of the story where David disobeys God, and so he gives him three punishments to choose from. He's like, I guess I'll take the death angel. So the death angel begins to sweep across Israel, and David's like, it's got to stop, it's got to stop. And so he ends up going to... and build an altar to sacrifice to God and worship so that the death angel will stop. And that's whenever he purchases the threshing floor of Ornan or Arana
to build
that. And that is the very site that became the temple.
Yep. Mm.
So they were so good that they did one album.
Yep. I loved them. They were good.
They just nailed it.
They were so good they did one album. Yes.
Yeah. Chris Tomlin, they were not.
Have we discussed how old Chris Tomlin is? I think he's in his 50s now, right?
Oh, he's got to be older than I am. So let's see. How old is Chris Tomlin? Let's figure this out. Let's see. That dude is short too, man.
Yeah.
Like he's like Michael
62.
James Fox. All right. What do you think? How old do you
62.
Think?
62. This is my guess.
You think he's 62?
I don't know. I don't have any frame of reference.
He's 56.
Oh my gosh, guys. How old do you think I am? He's 53.
That was close.
You were close.
Yeah. He actually just turned 53 on May 4th. So.
Ooh, Star Wars Day.
Star Wars.
There you go. Wow.
That's why he's so cool.
You know, one of my friends got married on May 4th, and they didn't know anything about that. And then they were celebrating their year anniversary, and somebody was like, hey, May the 4th be with you. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you talking about? That sounds like Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah. How tall do you think Chris Tomlin is?
He's short, so I'm going to go 5'7".
Oh, man, you guys were just... You missed it. It's 5'6".
5'6".
It's 5'6".
Isn't that like Tom Cruise height?
Probably. Which, by the way, I'm going to go see...
Are you seeing the Mission Impossible?
Tonight.
Nice.
Tonight.
Nice.
Have fun, man.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Hey, we are super glad to be with you again, and we're looking forward to next week as we start a new series. Is this the...
Survey says.
So, Steve Harvey, get ready, everybody.
Yeah.
Not really.
Heave Starvey.
Do you know how old David Crowder is?
I'm going to...
58.
62 is my guess. I don't know.
He's 53. He and Tomlin are
same age. Same age.
Yeah, he's
what
taller.
A good year. What a
yeah,
good
he was
year.
Born in 71, so he'll be 54. Four.
Ah.
But,
wow. What?
How old is Brandon?
Oh, my goodness. Brandon. All right, we got to go.
And how old are you?
Thank you for being with us. We're excited. Be with us in person on Sunday and then back in your car next week. We love you. We like you. See you then.
He's 34.